Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
And welcome back to another night at the Roundtable. Tonight, we're reviewing the 2013 found footage horror film, Willow Creek, written and directed by Bobcat Goldthwaite and starring Alexi Gilmore and Bryce Johnson. Gentlemen, introduce yourselves.
What's up, y'all? I'm David from the Blurry Photos Podcast.
Sup, y'all? It's me, Zinger, from the Zinger Podcast.
Thanks. Thanks David, for staying in the 90s with me. Nice.
Professional hour. Well, that would make me Derek Hayes of Monsters Among Us podcast. And as I said, this is Knights at the Round Table. Gentlemen, what did you think of this film?
Well, before we begin,
Justin, let's start with you.
Before we begin, I am actually going to be having a drink during this episode. I am sending you guys a picture of it, and it is related to the topic. I'm going to be having a Sierra Nevada Bigfoot barley wine style ale.
I've had that. It's all right.
Nice Foley work.
Thank you. It's got a nice pour to it.
How is it, Derek and Justin? You guys both had that.
Not good.
Yeah.
Barley wine.
Yeah.
It's very sharp.
Yep.
Very sour.
Oh, yep. I don't like sour beers.
Yep.
Hard to drink.
This is going to be a fun episode for me.
Justin's going to be real quiet. His mouth's going to be puckered closed.
It's going to be a better episode then.
I
like this guy.
I thought this was actually kind of delightful to watch. It's different than a lot of the stuff that you see out there, and it's different in a good way. As far as a found footage picture goes, like, you know, I'm not a huge fan of shaky cam and stuff like that, but this the way they did it in this film, it makes it more real and more relatable, and it really draws you into that world. And one of the things that we'll talk about later a little bit was I loved how they took these long shots and it was just one take, you know, of one setting, and they were there in front of the camera, and they kept going like several minutes at a time. And that's not easy to do. It's not easy to take a whole thing on camera, you know, when it's rolling. And you've got a scene to do and to keep it going like that. It's not easy. And I thought that was a really cool aspect of this. And it lent itself to additional things that I bring up later when we bring a guest in here. But I thought it was a lot of fun and had a nice build to it, and really put you in that world of hunting for Bigfoot, you know, out there going from happy-go-lucky to... happy go sad.
Real quick.
Happy go smashy face.
Yeah.
Justin, what did you think?
So you shot us this idea for this particular movie, and it's one when I saw the poster for it, I was like, this looks really familiar. Like, I swear I've seen like this image before. So watched the movie and was very impressed, and was kind of like, how have I not seen this sooner? That's the thing that got me, was I was like, how is this something I have not been able to see? Because it is right up the alley of, you know, great paranormal, you know, found footage stuff, much like our previous episode, Troll Hunter. We're actually on a good streak here, guys, so I can't wait to see what David does to fumble this fantastic drive we're making right now.
I'll tell you what, the other suggestions after you watch this, they had some prime choices. I can tell you that.
Oh boy. But no, I thought this was great. The of course found footage works really well for this, and it's something to where it's done in a way that is done right per se. It's not something like, I'm just going to use this as an example, Cloverfield, where I feel like I'm getting motion sickness every 5 seconds from someone not being able to hold a camera properly. Yeah. So this is better. Yes, it does have some moments where there's shaky cam because stuff happens. But no, I thought it was great. And I kind of like, as is said later on, you can sort of almost lead to your own conclusions with some of this stuff, which I find interesting. I'm going to take another drink of this ale.
Barley wine.
That's a brave choice. I really enjoyed this movie. I watched it right when it came out. I heard about it being released and was pretty excited to lay eyes on it. And this is probably my third time watching it, I would imagine. And it holds up decently. It's much better the first time, which most films are, but especially found footage films. And I should point that out, that not only is this a Bigfoot film, but it's a found footage film. So the cast and crew are up against two humongous hurdles. It's difficult to make a good found footage film anymore. And it's near impossible to make a good Bigfoot film, apparently, because no one else has seemed to be able to do it. So, you know, they already had the eight ball behind them, but I was pretty pleased with the execution here. It holds up as far as like the Bigfoot world is concerned, or the legend of the creature. I think they stick pretty well with that. They don't really go on any crazy excursions with the story. It was good stuff. Maybe we should do a synopsis before we go any further. Is that
yeah?
Okay. So essentially, what we have here is like we said, it's a found footage, and there's two characters, Jim and Kelly, boyfriend girlfriend, driving up from who knows where to Willow Creek near Six Rivers National Park in California, Northern California. And they're shooting a documentary about finding Bigfoot. It's just the two of them. They're using a handheld camera. They're visiting the town of Willow Creek. And eventually they make a pilgrimage to the filming site of the Patterson-Gimlin film. Unfortunately, due to some hairy circumstances, they don't make it. that's essentially the story. A lot of it is visuals. A lot of it is audio, like suspense, building suspense sort of thing. So it's not your typical narrative film where there's a big long story drawn out. There's a lot of backstory, especially for a film like this, but it's not your typical drama. Let's put it that way. It gets you right into the action. Actually, it doesn't, does it? I shouldn't say that.
It's got a good build. It
builds to the action.
Well, it gets you to the action of knowing that this is like a guy. It would be like one of us going out and trying to shoot an amateur documentary, you know, or just like, let's go legend tripping or something, and then film it and, you know, kind of host it as we go along. Not a super professional thing. It's just we got handheld recorders and a little, you know, mic, a handheld mic. And this is a thing we're kind of tag teaming with our significant other. And it's going to be a weekend of fun. And it builds on that and builds on that. And the great thing about it is it really does capture some of the awkwardness that goes into trying to do that, you know, as a podcaster or a producer of content kind of thing. They really touch on some of the, with the interviews and things like that, doing takes over and, you know, doing them two or three times till you get it right kind of thing. I appreciate
that.
There
were plenty of bad interviews of like townspeople in Willow's Creek.
I love
people
that old woman too. On there.
she's a real person. She actually runs, I think it's called the China Flat Museum or whatever museum it is up there they were visiting. She runs it. And whenever you ask her about Bigfoot, that's her response. Oh, I don't believe in it. This is all a bunch of bull.
That's great.
I just thought it was a strange choice for somebody to run that facility. But yeah, they interview, I can't think of the gentleman's name, Steve, something or another, that runs the bookshop up there.
Yeah.
Tom Yammerone, who's a friend of mine, that made an appearance, sang a song. You know, there's some fun Bigfoot legends up there that they really incorporate in the story. And not just tales and details, but people and places and things. You know, there's plenty of carvings and stuff they show. It's just the kitsch town combined with the scary atmosphere outside of town. It was just some combination of that really worked for me.
So you've been to this area before, Derek?
I have not, no.
Oh, okay.
I've been to Northern California, but I didn't make it to Willow Creek.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I was like, wait, am I gathering that he's been here before?
Sounds like we need to do a weekend excursion.
Yeah, there we go. Pilgrimage. Everybody's invited. Come on, let's go.
All right. Social distance, too. No, I mean, it's really cool, like, the whole setup, the whole, you know, they go to all the locations. I guess the best thing for my comparison would be, God, I don't want to bring it up, but it's always the same thing with me. The Mothman Festival. Yeah, I answered your own question, David. But
like when we went out to the TNT area?
Yeah, there's like a checklist to do when you go to the Mothman Festival. And if you go, you do this checklist of, you know, you go do this, you go do that. I feel like they're doing the same thing, but they're filming it, and it's one guy's adventure instead of going to a giant festival and everything. And it's interesting because he's got his reluctant girlfriend with him. It's maybe fiance. Actually, no. That is the saddest part of that. I saw that coming. I terrifyingly saw that coming.
Yeah, it's pretty great,
though. Are you speaking from personal experience, Justin?
No, I'm speaking. I actually, fortunately for me, when I asked the woman I love to marry me, she said yes. I'm only saying that because she stepped into the room momentarily.
What he's talking about is there's a tent scene where they're sleeping out at night, and Jim proposes to Kelly as they're Bigfoot hunting. And no surprise to a lot of people, she turned him down, probably because of those reasons. But it was kind of a weird spot in the film. And I really liked that because it grounded the film at that point. Like everything else going on outside had been ignored for a hot second and gave you a break and gave you a second to catch your breath and kind of prepare yourself for the final act, which is just this couple sitting in a tent being terrorized by these creatures.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. It's great. The long, just that long, and we talk about this later, but the shots that are just, they're stationary, they're long, they're quiet, you know, and we haven't said, I don't think we've mentioned yet that about Bryce, but we talk about how that is not really done that much anymore and how good it is. It's such a good tool to use, especially in a horror film where you have that silence and the ambiance of the environment, and that's all you have. And then you're kind of experiencing it with the people on screen, you know, in the story.
Yeah.
And it makes it so much more visceral to watch. It's really fun.
What David's hinting at is we were actually lucky enough to talk Bryce Johnson, who is the lead actor in the film, to actually come talk to us about the production of the film and the history behind it and his involvement. So we're going to have him on here later in the episode to kind of get some behind the scenes footage. But and I thought the performances were pretty great in this as well. The casting was pretty good. I love the use of the local people. That to me really also grounded the project in reality, that, you know, I recognize some of these people from documentaries or, you know, festivals or, you know, whatever. They're just familiar faces that when you see them, you're like, yeah, they're definitely talking Bigfoot. I know who this person is.
Yeah.
And all kinds of other tropes.
Yeah. The tropes you hear in Bigfoot stories and encounters, down to the crying that some people say they hear, yeah. You know, which is really freaky and awesome.
And they involve the whoops, the wood knocks, the rock clacking.
Mm-hmm. Scat and fur.
Yeah, scat and fur. Everything you can think of. Foot tracks, they find those. Everything you can think of is somehow, you know, I don't remember them mentioning a smell, though.
No, they say that. Yeah, that is true.
That was the only thing left out.
But not all encounters involve smells. You know, I think that's why they classify certain ones as skunk apes. Because not all of them are as smelly. But you're right.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
So I guess this is probably as good a time as any to bring in our guest. You may know him from his countless television appearances. You may recognize him from the hit television program Expedition Bigfoot, or as part of the podcast Bigfoot Collectors Club. But most likely, you'll know him best as Jim in the film Willow Creek. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mr. Bryce Johnson. Bryce, thanks for coming on.
Hey, it's my pleasure.
We just watched this movie, and I got to be honest, it's one of my favorite Bigfoot films. It's one of my favorite found footage films, if you will. And pretty excited to have you here. Pretty excited to have some questions answered. I think all three of us have a lot of them. Mm-hmm. I'm going to kick things off since I did the introduction here, I guess. The casting process. I got to know, were you guys part of a casting process, or was this something that the director, Bobcat Goldthwait, wanted you guys to, he picked you guys out personally? What was the situation there? What was the history behind that? How did you get involved with the project, I guess is the better question.
Yeah, right. So I had done a film with Bobcat Goldthwait before called Sleeping Dogs Lie. And my co-star Alexi had done World's Greatest Dad with Bobcat. And so, you know, he reached out to me directly, and was like, you know, I'm thinking about doing this, you know, Bigfoot found footage film. And I was wondering if you might be interested. And of course I was like, dude, you got the right guy. Hell yes, I would be interested. But I think he was also like, oh, he's a pretty low maintenance guy. You know, he's not really an on-set diva, and I can sort of, you know, put him up in the Bigfoot Motel and he won't complain too much. And you know, Alexi's the same way. We're really both sort of, you know, no fuss, no muss type of actors. So, and I think, you know, and he's one of those few directors that really likes working with his friends and the same people who he likes working with. He calls us the Bob Wood players. So it was an honor. And I don't know if he ever knew, you know, my interest in Bigfoot that extended before we even had that conversation. But I think once he started to find out, like, oh my God, you're already into this, I was like, yeah. And so it was sort of the perfect synchronicity.
So this wasn't your parlay into the cryptozoology or the paranormal. You were already interested in this subject before you took the film on.
Yeah, I've been interested in the subject of Bigfoot and UFOs and aliens ever since I was a little kid. I mean, when that bookmobile rolled around my elementary school, I went right to the cryptid, the strange section, and
with Daniel, you know, Cohen books.
Yeah, all that stuff really set my imagination rolling. And I think it was maybe I was watching a rerun of In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy when I saw the Patterson-Gimlin footage, and that really sort of sparked my imagination.
Awesome.
Because I had a bookmobile back when I was young, too. I don't know. You said bookmobile, and I had all these memories come flooding back, and I'm like, oh, yes, it's so good.
Yeah, they don't really – I don't know if they really use them anymore. Yeah, there's. I mean, most schools have libraries and stuff, but I always – and ours had, like, a smaller little library as well, but I always enjoyed when the bookmobile had all the best paranormal books, you know. And then you could do requests, right? They'd go back to the main library, and next time they rolled through, if you had any requests, they would bring those books. And so I was always requesting more books on Bigfoot and UFOs and all that stuff.
What was your gateway phenomena or creature, or, you know, what have you?
Man, that's a good question. I would have to say it was the idea of Bigfoot that seemed like the most real to me at the time. And so, you know, I had some strange experience when I was like 5 or 6. I saw some red devilish type character in my bedroom window when I was young with these peering yellow eyes. So I feel like
it might be story time, Bryce.
Yeah.
Where did this take place?
So this took place in Colorado, and I talk about it on the very first episode of our podcast, Bigfoot Collectors Club. But I'll do the short version of you guys here. And we'd awesome. Basically just moved into a new house, and we were on a cul-de-sac. And I remember a couple neighborhood kids came by, and we were playing in my driveway. My mom was gardening out in the front, and what this older kid brought over what looked like sort of like a game board half something, and. And he was like, tonight we're going to summon the devil. And I was like, oh, shit. You know? And my mom overheard it. And she was like, you know, you kids get the hell off my driveway, you know. And looking back, I think it was some type of some homemade Ouija board or something like that, you know. But anyway.
So this sounds so 80s. I don't know when this actually took place, but it sounds
it was right in the 80s. There's no doubt about it. Yeah,
right in the middle.
I was born in 77, so this must have been. Yeah,
this white snake is playing in the background.
For sure.
Huge hairspray hair. I get it.
Got the pegs on my bicycle.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, so that, you know, everybody left. She kicked everybody out. And you know, I remember the older kid being like, don't worry, he's still coming tonight. Speaking of like the devil. And I was like, oh, shit, you know.
What's your experience to be totally ruined?
Yeah, so that night, it like in the middle of the night, I remember just waking up out of the blue and out my bedroom window. I was on a bunk bed. My older brother was on in the top bunk. But I was looking out the window and this sort of red, blurry creature comes profile right into frame and then just stops in the middle and slowly peers into my soul with these like glowing yellow eyes. And I just remember just being like, I couldn't move. I was completely in shock. And it just stared at me for what seemed like forever. It turned its head and then just walked off. Now, I'm totally willing to give that this might have been that older kid in some sort of mask or something, but the way I remember it, this thing was like glowing and it had some sort of ethereal type of existence. It just felt supernatural, and especially those eyes. But that just sent me down on a path of like, you know, what are ghosts? What is all this shit? You know, that's probably the right answer. I think ghosts might have been the first, my gateway into the strange, because they always had more books on ghosts, it seemed, than anything else, you know.
It was more part of the zeitgeist or popular culture even then. You know, yeah. It seemed to be the more popular monster out there.
Yeah, for sure.
I got to throw this out there. That is like, to this day, still one of the things I fear the most is just like rolling over in bed and like glancing out the window and seeing anything there would just terrify me to my core. And it's something that got me if I saw that as a kid, I would have been done. I would have I would have flown out of that room in a heartbeat screaming.
Sounds like Bryce, you established dominance by just staring him down.
Well, I knew to do that, right? I knew to just
The sticker down. Step two was just to defecate right there to make him know that was your home.
You knew territory. About step two. I didn't even tell you that, and that's exactly what I did. It terrorized me. But, you know, it sent me down this journey that I feel like I've been on ever since. So it really helped sort of, you know, shape what my life would be. I mean, especially with this interest. And so in a strange way, I'm kind of grateful for that experience.
So then you circle back 30 some years later, and here you are, the star of one of the best found footage Bigfoot films, if not the best, to come out, I'd say, since the Patterson-Gimlin film itself. That's got to be a pretty big moment for you. It's pretty exciting to be part of that, or was it just like another film? Or, you know, what were your thoughts going into it?
No, not at all. Well, first and foremost, I'm so proud of that film, and I'm so glad that it stands out and as, you know, as a great Bigfoot film, because I've seen a lot of the Bigfoot films, and there's a lot of shitty Bigfoot films out there. You know, there's a few really great ones, you know, Legend of Boggy and a few other ones. But so looking back, I'm just so pleased as punch that people dig this film. And, you know, it all really goes to Bobcat, because I think he, you know, as a kid, he always loved the Patterson-Gimlin footage too. And so I'm really playing him in that movie. And and so, you know, look, I can't give Bobcat enough credit, because I think that guy is just such a, I hate the word genius, but I just think he was taking a chance making a found footage film. He had never done one before. And I think his impetus was always like, I like this genre, but I hate how there's all these edits. And it feels like, you know, if someone picked up this camera that someone, you know, found a found footage film and they just hit play, that's what he wanted to, that he's like, that's what I want to create. It, instead of like all these cuts and edits, you know, it's like, who picked up this camcorder and then went back and edited it and released it? You know, he's like, that never made
some
sense to me.
Son of a bitch. That's who did that.
Right. Exactly.
That,
so
that's one of the things I really loved about this was the super long shots, just one single shot. And it's so long. And I was wondering if you guys, like, how much of it was scripted, how much of it was improvised?
Yeah, well, a lot of it was improvised. And so when Bobcat gave us, it was really more of a film synopsis. It was about 12 to 15 pages of really the beats of what he wanted to happen. And and just to give you an example, like, you know, those beats just included like tent scene, something happens, you know, and that's it. That didn't say 20-minute tent scene, you know.
Yeah.
So we really just, so much of that was created while we were filming. And, you know, a lot of that dialogue is our own. And Bobcat would be there the entire way, just sort of like, okay, we need to hit sort of these moments. And he had it all in his mind of what he wanted to happen. And so, yeah, you know, there's only 67 edits in that entire film, which is just unheard of. So that was really his goal, was to like make this feel like somebody picked up the camera, and they were, you know, store grade camcorders. We only had two of them. We never had to use the backup one, but he bought it at Best Buy. You know, he wanted it to be like so
authentic,
real authentic.
For sure,
right.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And that's me basically doing. So I'm like almost a cinematographer. I'm holding the camera the whole time. Those are all like my shots. You know, we did have an incredible cinematographer who would set the settings and all that stuff and take care of the camera before and after the, you know, the cut and the rolling. But yeah, it was a very hands-on experience. And a lot of that dialogue about, you know, Bigfoot and stuff was my own.
It looked like the environment itself played a big part in almost a character, where you guys are, especially at the end, your two characters are lost and you're, you know, walking around the manzanita scrub or whatever that is. How much of the environment did he just like throw you into it, and you filmed everything on location? Like, I'm thinking of those scary tent scenes, the long scene. Was that filmed somewhere in a yard, or was that filmed out in the woods? What was the situation there?
Yeah, well, that tent scene was filmed at Louse Camp. And I don't know if you guys have ever been to Willow Creek in Northern California, but it's the gateway to Bigfoot country. And you know, that's where the Big China Flats Museum is, that Roger Patterson took his film right to Al Hodgson at that museum. So Bluff Creek, where Bob Gimlin and Roger Patterson shot that film in 67, is right next to Willow Creek, and Louse Camp is where they stayed the night before they got that footage. So it's authentic. And yes, you're exactly right. That whole area was like a character in the film, because, you know, just like Jim was sort of like wanting to retrace those steps, I was getting to retrace them as well. And I had never been there before. So it was like my own pilgrimage, being able to go to Willow Creek and then go to these areas where all this was actually shot. So yeah, I mean, it just lends itself to like play in that environment. And, you know, at one point we even actually had an opportunity to go down to the film site, because this was right around the time that a lot of those guys like Steven Stroyford and Robert Lederman were like trying to locate the actual film site. And Robert Lederman sort of, you know, he was a guide on some of the locations for that film. He's like, I could take you down there, you know, to the actual film site. And, you know, we never ended up going because we didn't need to get down there. And it wasn't easy going there anyway. And we got everything.
It's pretty remote back in there, right? To get to that actual film site.
It's very remote. And we would have had to leave the cars behind and stuff like that. So it didn't work for us to actually film at the film site. But we were right there in Louse Camp is where we did the tent scene. And man, that's as close as you can get.
Did you have any idea what they were going to do? Or were they just like, get in this tent and we're going to make some sounds and beat on it?
Yeah, no. So I remember Bobcat sat us down before and he was just like, I want to attempt a really long tent scene. And, you know, you got to give the guy credit, because I mean, it's almost a third of the film in a strange way. And he was just like, I want to like create this tension. And it's what I love about that scene is first of all, we've all, you know, by the time we get there, you know, the audience feels like they know these characters well enough, you know, we've took the time to establish who these people are, and the audience can, you know, sort of relate to them and begin to like them. And then in that tent scene, it's just, you know, what's so great is it establishes silence, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just like, it's such a missing part in so many great horror films. It's just like, and as an audience member, you and your own mind are filling in all the elements of what's taking place outside the tent, you know? So, and it's just
the old Jaws effect.
Yes,
absolutely. You don't show the shark and let the people's imagination fill in the blanks.
That's exactly right. So we had, you know, me and Alexi were in that tent and we really had no idea how long it would be, what they were going to do outside the tent. We didn't know what kind of ruckus they were going to be making, but they really set the tone for us. And, you know, Bobcat was making calls and, you know, beating the trees and then throwing rocks at our tent, you know. Like he could have totally whacked us in the head, you know. We had no idea, but we only did three takes of that tent scene, and that took that took all night. And then it was the first one. It was funny. I got really sort of emotional, and he's like, bring it back a little bit. I'm like, no, man, I'm fucking scared, man. He's like, okay,
how much of that emotion was you, and how much of it was your character?
Oh, it was so real, right? It was so. Like, I've done acting before, and this was so easy to get into it, just because it was just like it was like the perfect acting exercise, and then the second one. The second take is the one we ended up using. And by the end of the third take, we were beat, and we all just, you know, conked out right there at Louse Camp at like 3 a.m. And it was amazing.
It looked like it was emotionally draining to be part of that scene, honestly.
It was, because you're intently listening, and you're like, and it's really great. Those reactions are real, because we didn't know what was coming or, you know, what to expect. So yeah, a lot of people really reach out to me and they're like, I love that tent scene. And I'm like, me too. I love that tent scene as well. And so, you know, I think Bobcat took a big risk with that. It took a big chance, and I think it paid off, you know?
Yeah,
for sure.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
So I want to throw something out there, because this caught me off guard when, like, we were, of course, given this movie to watch by Derek, and I was sitting there, you know, going on IMDb, looking up stuff, and I noticed the director was Bobcat. And I'm like, you mean like the comedian? So that kind of took me off. I've never connected that, but after looking up stuff, he seems to be very into this, much like Dan Aykroyd's into like UFOs and stuff. So that's just something that completely hit me from left field. But you're saying, Bryce, that he's like super into this and like does a ton of stuff with it. So do you know what got him into this, or is it just something that he's just enjoyed all of his life, much like all of us here?
Yeah, no. So the thing that got him into it was the In Search Of episode with Leonard Nimoy. And, and he saw that, and he was pretty much hooked, you know. And yeah, you know, I think a lot of people who don't know Bobcat as a filmmaker think of his, you know, his hugely successful career in the 80s, but he really wanted to make a mark of his own in film and stuff. And his first directorial debut was, you know, he wrote and directed Shakes the Clown, which I don't know if you guys seen, but what an entry into the film world. It's about an alcoholic, psychotic clown. It's been great, but,
right up my alley.
Yeah, no, totally.
Redundant.
And then I did, he also starred in that. And then, so his first film that he just wanted to write and direct was a film called Sleeping Dogs Lie, which thankfully I ended up getting cast in the lead. We just really bonded, man. And he's done some incredible films since then. And he's just, he plays by his own rules, right? So he writes what he wants, and they're always outside the box projects. He doesn't have some network giving him notes. And so he's very, artistic in that sense. And I got to give the guy a lot of credit, because his films are just, they're so odd. They're so strange. And those are two words that I just love, you know?
Yeah. I got to be honest. I loved Bobcat growing up. When I was a kid, I did an impression of him that my whole family, like, oh, do the Bobcat impression. You got to do it. You got to do it. I couldn't even begin to do it now, but.
Right. Right.
It was just amazing. And to see the change that he's made or the departure from that, you know, the schizoid character that he played in practically every movie he was in the 80s. And he kind of flipped that on its head. And now he's like this artsy, outside the box kind of, I love the journey that he's taken, as the millennials like to say.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I know he's got at least a few more, if not a dozen films in him. So, and they all have something to say, you know. That was, I often would ask him about writing, like, you know, what's your process? And he was like, well, you got to start with something that you want to say. You have to want to say something. And so, you know, it's a great way for him to use his voice.
Are there any more cryptozoology or paranormal themed films in his, in his wheelhouse or coming?
Oh yeah, he's talked to me about trying to do some alien UFO one, and I'm like, and I'm always feeding him ideas and stuff like that, and we've gotten close to collaborating on something. It hasn't come together yet, but we're just waiting for the right moment, I think, to maybe do something like that. But I know he wants to
go out to Joshua Tree and shoot for a couple weekends. And...
yeah,
sounds great.
Something very much maybe like Willow Creek, but in the genre of aliens and UFOs. And I know he would, you know, put an original spin on it, you know?
Yeah. Now, I'm going to circle back here a little bit, and I hate to keep taking over all the questions here, guys, but did they ever show Sasquatch or Bigfoot in this film? I went back and watched it again this morning, and I do not remember seeing, you see I'm going to call it the Bride of the Forest. I don't know what you want to call the character there that, we'll talk about her in a minute, but do they actually show Bigfoot anywhere? And if not, did they have a suit at any point that they just didn't end up using? Or
no, he always knew that we were never going to show the monster, because as soon as you do, at least in his opinion, was it kind of ruins everything else, right? So it's like,
I agree with him completely.
It's like you're going to hang your hat on what the creature looks like as opposed to the film. And where he's like, if I don't show this thing, you know, each individual audience member can just fill in the blanks of what they think this creature looks like and is. So he never set about making up a suit or anything like that. He always knew that he was just, you know, not going to show the monster, you know? And I was like, that's great. Because as I'm sure you guys have seen, a lot of the Bigfoot movies that do, you're like, that's right where they go wrong. You know, they're like, oh, well, you lost me, you know?
And they do it in the first 10 minutes too. That's the bad part.
Right.
Can you think of a perfect example of that we may have discussed on this very show?
The man who killed Hitler and then the Bigfoot.
Yes.
Yeah. I saw that. That was a good little film there. Yeah, and a little wonky Bigfoot. But yeah, you're totally right. It's like it divides an audience, right? You're either like, because I know some people like think, oh, that's a cool take on. And then the other half is like, oh man, I was good up until this point, you know. So we just wanted to set that all aside together.
With the going back to the long shots and just the framing of it and the cinematography of the shots, I spent the whole time watching this film being like, okay, where is the Bigfoot in the background? Like, it's got to be like something's just watching them. And I'm sure that's not part of it. But that, you know, for me, that's like a fun little extra that really kept me into the film and wondering what was going to happen next and stuff.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the sounds of Bigfoot was Bobcat himself. So, you know, he took a very hands-on approach.
he did a good job. I mean, as far as the whoops and howls and stuff you hear, I mean,
they got that crying.
Yeah.
That you sometimes hear. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing as a part of a suit or something that he made was he actually hand carved the footprint or the wood stomper, as they call them in the hoaxing world, so you know, that footprint you see came from a wood stomper that he had made himself. And one thing I found incredibly interesting was, so when we stopped, when we cut rolling, and I was like, you know, I saw a cameraman put this wood stomper on and try and like make these tracks. He was trying to make tracks, and he was having the hardest time just walking, let alone doing like a big stride. And then forget about making an impression, an inch and a half, 2 inches, 3 inches into the soft sand. And it was like an aha moment. I was like, holy shit. And I just realized like how authentic a lot of those trackways that people like Dr. Jeffrey Meldrum have studied and guys like Cliff Berrickman. I was like, it was almost like Bigfoot became realer to me even at that point, because I got it, right? Like, you can't just go around in one of these wooden feet and create these trackways that have spontaneity in them, that are dug 4 inches, you know, deep into the mud and have like these 5 foot strides. It's next to impossible, you know? Yeah. So it was really like I was like just blown away by that. And it became a real light bulb moment for me that, man, you know, there's something to this mystery. And I've always believed that there had been, but that was a real like, wow, type of moment.
people always think that, you know, you just slap those feet on and go take off running and you can fool everyone.
Yeah, but not the case.
The people that are being fooled, some of them are seasoned trackers or, you know, outdoorsmen that, that know the ground, that know the terrain, and they can just take one look at it and say, this isn't a wooden footprint or anything like that. This is something flexible, something biological.
Oh yeah. I mean, 100%. And you know, you see the guys, I won't list them here, who have said, oh yeah, those are my footprints. And they're showing you their wood stompers and you're like, give me a break. You know,
yeah.
First of all, that looks so hokey and hacky, and let alone to think that this old man is out there, you know, fooling everyone. I don't think so. You know?
Yeah. And the places where they find them too. It's incredible.
Yeah. 100%.
So I do want to throw this out there because, I mean, watching the movie doesn't answer every question you're probably asking yourself.
Right.
And I'm given the opportunity to sort of kind of voice my opinion now on this. My thing was, I'm like, well, they don't ever show a Bigfoot. And this whole situation of like the one woman in the woods, the guy being like, you need to turn around, you need to get out of here. I'm like, is there something darker going on where there's not actually a cryptid? And that's what they're trying to hide. Like, there's some cult or something back there. But like I said, the movie doesn't give you any evidence of that. So I'm like, I don't know. It was just some own head thing I was thinking at this while I was watching it too.
Yeah, well, here's another example of great filmmaking, right? It could be all those or nothing, right?
Exactly.
You as an audience member are left to fill in the blanks. But, you know, I know. So in Bobcat's mind, there was a creature, there was a Bigfoot, and he did take a bride or a sex slave. And that's what you see in the end, you know, and that's these women that go missing, you know. And in my mind, at the end, he kills Jim and, you know, he takes Alexi's character for his own, you know, this Bigfoot creature. And you know, the guy that turns us around, it's great, right? It serves as like a red herring, you know, in a sense, like, oh, is this some, like, you know, deep woods marijuana operation or,
yeah,
right.
You know, that guy could have served multiple functions, right? Like, is he part of this, like, you know, is Bigfoot intelligent enough to like hire heavy or is this guy just protecting like some marijuana crop, you know,
or something more devious
or something more nefarious? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, as far as the Bride of the Forest, I listen to Bigfoot Collectors Club whenever I can. And you know, everything. You seem to have your fingers on the pulse of everything paranormal. Do you have accounts that you've heard of this? Like, the concept is familiar to me, but I can't think of a single account where somebody thought this had happened. It was just kind of the David Pilates thing, where it's one of the theories that could explain some of these disappearances. Have you heard anything that kind of hints to that?
Well, thank you so much, man, first of all. And yeah, you know, we've talked about this on the podcast you know, so there's a great book written by a guy named Joshua Cutchin and Timothy Renner. It's called Where the Footprints End, Bigfoot and High Strangeness. And there's a chapter in there about women in white and how it might be related to the Bigfoot phenomenon. And and we talk about, you know, we had Bobcat on the podcast and we're like, did that happen subconsciously? Did you know about, you know, sort of the women in white and their relationship to Bigfoot? And he was like, no, not really, you know. But it's funny because that missing 411 stuff was some of the inspiration behind using that missing person and that woman. So he was familiar with David Pilates' work, and I think that inspired some of the, you know, the missing persons aspect of it. It just happened to be a woman. And yeah, I don't know. It's an incredible chapter in that book, and I highly recommend it. But yeah, there seems to be some sort of relationship. Not many, but, you know, people have seen these strange ethereal type women in white, you know, and who knows what is going on there.
Yeah. I mean, there's the connection with the UFOs and Bigfoot as well that people talk about all the time, where they see the odd lights or the orbs or whatever with the sighting of the creature itself. So, you know, it could be women in white. It could be aliens. Who knows where these things are coming from, I guess.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't know what to make of the, and that's why I use the term phenomenon, because I think there's more to it than just an unconfirmed North American wood ape in the woods. I mean, there's too many accounts of this high strangeness aspect that goes along with with Bigfoot, and you just named a few of them, right? Like these strange balls of light that people see. I've talked to witnesses who said they've seen the creature materialize and dematerialize in front of their eyes, you know? And then you have these
cloaking.
Yeah, this cloaking phenomenon. It's so strange. And you're right, you know, there are quite a few cases of people seeing these creatures either before or after seeing some sort of anomalous light in the sky, whether it's a craft or just some strange light in the sky. So I don't know. And, you know, I know it kind of bugs a lot of researchers because it doesn't really fit inside their little box. But this is what I love about that subject, right? Is like, if you try and stick anything into a box in the paranormal, whether it be ghosts, cryptids, aliens, UFOs, you're not going to get close to the truth, nowhere near it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's, for me, it's looking at these, all these accounts and all these people's experience and finding that one strange detail that might parallel some other detail that you hear about in somebody's out of body experience or somebody's mystical experience or somebody's UFO sighting that you can find these patterns, you know? And John Keel sort of felt that same way, that all this stuff was somehow related in some strange way. And he housed it under the term ultra terrestrial, you know, and I don't know if Bigfoot falls into that category, but I mean, it certainly hits some of the markers at times.
To certify my nerd cred, if I may, real quick, Bryce, I just want to thank you for your work on the Hulk versus animated movie and the Doctor Strange movie for lending your voice, and also the several video games you have been in as well.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, that's another credit I'm extremely proud of. I love the character of Doctor Strange and Magic with a K. I don't know. I dig that character, and I got really lucky landing that role. But thank you, man. I really appreciate that. I love playing games. I love video games. I love that Marvel universe. And so, that was an honor.
All right. I know you kind of hinted at it, but I'm sorry. I'm going to derail this even worse now. Favorite superhero?
Oh, well, no doubt about it. Doctor Strange, man. Just the idea that, yeah, I mean, opening up portals, using magic. That's what I want to do.
Awesome. Great to hear.
Bryce, I was wondering about how long it took you guys to put this together, filming wise.
Yeah, great question. So by the time Bobcat knew he had the cast together and stuff, we all road tripped from Los Angeles up to Willow Creek, the Six Rivers National Forest, and we shot everything in about 8 to 9 days, which is unheard of. And our crew was 7 of us, right? It was me, Alexi, Bobcat, our cinematographer, our sound guy, Frank, our producer, Amy, and her little brother who served as ukulele man and our NRPA. So yeah, man, it's like a handful of people out there, you know, trying to make a film. And if it wasn't for the vision, you know, and it sounds so easy to do, but if it wasn't for Bobcat's vision of what he thought something like, you know, this found footage film could be, I don't think it would have came together. And it was so synchronicitous, my love, because, and I'll just add this, like, we're very much those characters, right? Like, I'm very much Jim, right? Like, sure. This believer who thinks there's something to this Bigfoot thing. And my girlfriend, who's just like very skeptical about the whole idea, you know? So it lends itself to that sort of truthfulness, because in a strange way, we really didn't have to do too much.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Did you improvise the ring?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. So Bobcat knew that was one of the things, right? He was like, you know, that was one of the things in the script. This guy's going to propose and she's going to turn him down.
Because it makes it more endearing, you know, it really levels it off.
Totally. Yeah, I love that too, right? Because how many times, I mean, you know, yeah, I don't know. That just added such a dimension to the character. She's like, maybe if this guy wasn't hunting Bigfoots, she would have said yes, right? It was like the one sort of caveat that she's like, I can't do it now.
Yeah, but you're right. Like, I think having a vision and going into that with a plan, you got to know, because you can't just throw everybody in the forest and be like, improvise getting a Bigfoot attack, you know, like, it's gonna kind of devolve into chaos. So, yeah, it's good to hear it, and nice that Bobcat has that vision and stuff and can really put that together. I don't think it's an easy thing to do.
No.
Yeah. Well, thank you. You know, and I'll say it again. Like, being a Bigfoot fan and stuff like that, it just kind of tickles me that I have this film that I think holds up, and I'd like to think in the canon of Bigfoot movies, it stands out at least as one of the better ones. And so I'm extremely pleased by that.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm definitely a big fan. And we really appreciate you taking the time to come on and talk to us. But before you go, I do have a quick question about, did you experience anything up there while you were up there for 8 or 9 days? You were tromping through the woods. Did you guys see anything strange? Did you pass a footprint? Some sort of stick structure, anything that would suggest that maybe that thing's up there?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, I've told this story before, but so there's one point where we're driving down this very steep road, and it's where Alexi and my character enter the wilderness. We leave the car behind and we, you know, start making our way down to the supposed film site. And it was at that time that we were filming that I felt like something was watching us, and all the woods got really quiet, really, really quiet. And this sense of dread sort of washed over me. And, you know, you can even hear Bobcat talk about it. It's like, I've never seen Bryce angry or mad, but he was whatever, he was like pissed. And he was like, can we just get the shot? You know, cause I, and I don't even know if he knows about my experience there. I don't think I've ever told him, but, you know, I don't know. I felt like something was, I didn't want to be like, I feel like there's a Bigfoot watching us. You know, I would have sounded crazy, but looking back, I don't know any other way to explain it. It was like this, and they didn't feel it either, which is so very strange. So it's almost like it singled me out in a way, or at least I was sensitive to whatever was happening there. But
was this like a predator, like the feeling of a predator looking at you? Like, what, describe the feeling that you had.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what it is, right? You just, it's, there's a crispness that goes in the air, and you just feel like something's wrong. You know, something's happening that shouldn't be happening right now. And the forest got really quiet, and you know, when you just feel eyes on the back of your head, you know, you feel like something is watching you. And it was just a sense of dread, and I was really uneasy about it. But I'd like to think that maybe there was something, you know, maybe a Bigfoot watching over that scene take place. I don't know. Looking back, that would be, that'd
or
be pretty
a bear,
sweet.
Maybe, or mountain lion, yeah, or hillbilly.
Bear. Yeah. Oh, yeah. My wife has this. So we watch Expedition Bigfoot on Sundays with my wife, and she's interesting too. She's like that Alexi character. She's a little skeptical, and lately she's come up with a new theory, and she calls it the tweaker theory. She's just like, oh, that's just a tweaker. She laughs so hard because, like, hey, you know, maybe when I was out there, it was just some tweaker getting ready to kill me. But I just love that idea. Like, oh, tree structures, tweakers. Oh, something on thermal, tweakers.
But 16-inch footprints, though, Bryce. Come on.
Tweakers. Tweakers.
Three tweakers.
Double-stepping tweakers.
Double-stepping tweakers.
Well, you mentioned it. Tell us a little bit about Expedition Bigfoot before we duck out of here.
Yeah, right. So, well, we finished up our second season a little bit ago. It's airing right now on Discovery Plus, and I think episode 7 will be airing this Saturday. And if you guys haven't seen it, wait till you see what happens around episodes 10, 11, and 12. I mean, it just goes gangbusters.
Nice.
And
you guys are in Oklahoma for the season, is that right?
We started out in Kentucky, and then we ended up in Washington.
Oh,
so,
Kentucky, that's right.
Yeah, we go to southeastern Kentucky, and and we have some crazy shit happen there. And then, you know, basically the leads kind of run out. So we move over to Washington near the Puget Sound, right near the Olympic National Forest. And man, so much activity and just, and some great evidence, man. I'm really stoked about everything we experienced. And I'm really proud of that show too. I think it's a great ride, man. You know, and I think there's a lot of people who want that type of scientific rigor with high technology trying to move this ball forward. And that's what we aim to do.
Yeah. You guys aren't out there hooping in the woods and listening for distant coyotes and stuff. You guys are actually out there with some equipment and rationalizing what you're hearing and what you're experiencing and trying to come up with logical explanations before you automatically think it's a Bigfoot. I haven't watched the entire series yet. I'm a busy man, but I've checked out several episodes and I'm a big fan of the show. So I highly recommend everybody check it out as well.
And you said you had a podcast too, correct?
Yeah. Yes. So me and my great friend, Michael McMillan, he's an actor as well. And our super producer, Riley Bray, we've been doing a podcast called Bigfoot Collectors Club. And it's just, we interview incredible guests about their personal paranormal history. And then we go into a story of high strangeness. And we just finished our 150th episode. And, you know, we don't take ourselves too seriously. But we're very serious about the subject. We all have a huge passion for strangeness and the unknown. And we've always just been ourselves. And I think a lot of people try and take it very seriously, as it should be. But, you know, I think comedy is also a great gateway into this subject for people who aren't into it. So, you know, we like bringing people who are on the edges of this thing and bringing them into the world of high strangeness and say, come in and listen to this story. And what do you think of this? And they're, you know, so it's a great thing to do. I love that show. And yeah, check it out.
You know, like I said earlier, I listened to it and I love when you guys have a guest on and you ask them, so what's your paranormal history? And, oh, I don't have any. I don't have any paranormal history. But then they go on to tell you like four different stories that are jaw on the floor dropping. Like, what do you mean? Yeah. You don't have any? Like, everybody has a story. And you guys definitely show that every person you bring on has something strange that's gone on.
Well, that has been one of the most eye-opening things, too. I mean, first of all, I guess when we started this thing, I had couple concerns. One, I was going to be like, hey, we're going to run out of these stories of high strangeness. Isn't there only like 10 or 12 of these things? And wrong. I mean, we could go on forever. There's so many incredible encounters, abduction experiences, Bigfoot encounter. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And then my second thing was like, you know, what if these guests don't have any personal paranormal history? What if they just don't believe or they've never been affected by it? Again, wrong. I would say like 90 to 95% of our guests, just like you mentioned, if they haven't had a paranormal experience personally, they know someone close to them who has. So this thing is like cancer, right? It affects everybody in a strange way. And I'm fascinated by that because we're all in this big mystery together, right? Nobody is outside of this paranormal mystery. Even those materialist reductionists who like to think, no, I'm just science-based atheist, none of that's all bullshit. Like, you know, it's touching those people too. They just may not like to admit it as much, but
yeah, but in a different way.
Yeah, or in a different way, exactly. But this strangeness, this paranormal world, man, it affects all of our reality. And I'm fascinated by it. I can't get enough of the stuff.
Well, we certainly appreciate you taking the time to not only join us, but to investigate all this stuff, get to the bottom of it, and going out in the field and doing stuff that we're not doing. We're sitting in our chairs being comfortable and talking about this stuff, and you're out there actually looking at it. You're looking for it. So thank you so much for that. Thank you again for coming on the show. Please tell everybody where they can find you, where they can find Bigfoot Collectors Club. I know you already mentioned it, but for everybody with terrible memories, one more time.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. And, you know, I'm a big fan of what you guys are doing, too. So I love your guys' work. I love this paranormal community. I think, you know, it's just it's a really great group of people. And I want to bring more people into it. But, yeah, you can find me. I'm all over social media. I'm mostly on Instagram at Mr. Bryce Johnson. I'm on Twitter. Same for Bigfoot Collectors Club. And Expedition Bigfoot is airing at Discovery Plus. And you can find Bigfoot Collectors Club, the podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. So check us out.
Awesome. Thank you, Bryce. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Bryce.
Thanks, yeah, it's Bryce. My pleasure. Thank you so much, you guys.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
So, gentlemen, before we kick out of here, Justin, what do you think? Would you recommend this film to others? What did you think of the film overall? What are your final thoughts here?
I would definitely recommend this film. It was great. Like I said in the interview and beforehand, you can kind of lead to your own conclusions, even though there is, as was discussed, a director's choice for what happened. But, I mean, it sets up, like, that there could be other things going on. I don't know. I really like that it kind of is... kind of choose your own ending to what happened. I mean, one thing definitely happens, but there's multiple things that could be going on. You don't know, because the movie, it's found footage. It is one person shooting it. It doesn't have a cut scene away to show what's going on somewhere else, but it's a very interesting film, and I think it's done fantastically, and he did hint at maybe more in the future, and I would definitely be down and very interested to see what comes next from their collaborations and their work together.
To be in those films.
Starring Justin Zenger.
Yes. Oh my gosh, yes. Background character expert.
You're the dude on the ukulele.
Oh, every time. I don't know how to play it. And I don't think that guy did either.
Ouch.
He sounds fired.
David, what did you think of the film?
I would recommend this. Yeah, I think I'll tell you why you at home listening would probably enjoy this. It's coming from the perspective that at least Derek and I are going into with the documentary that we're going to be starting up here soon to shoot. It was a neat thing to see people out there doing that kind of stuff and thinking, what would I do in that situation? It's as awkward as sometimes it can be when you do go out in the field and talk to people and try to, you know, look like you're investigating and knowing what you're doing. So I think just for that perspective alone, I think a lot of our listeners will recognize what that's like, especially listening to us as, you know, longtime podcasters. I think people will recognize that and relate to it and enjoy it. And if I feel like it hooks you pretty early on and you don't even realize that you've been hooked until you're, you know, in Willow Springs with them and being like, well, that was a weird encounter kind of thing, you know? And so I think people will get a kick out of this, and it's a good little thing to watch, you know, if you're sitting there at night being like, well, I've already watched all of Bob's Burgers and I've gone through my, I've gone through the new movies that are out. Let's and if you haven't heard it, like I somehow I missed this one. It came out in what, 2014? I think 2013. Goodness. So I missed this one when it came out, and I'm sorry I did. Like it's a fun one, and I hate to. I'm sure it gets compared to the granddaddy of all found footage films, Blair Witch. But I feel like
this
if
is
you.
Better.
I feel like if you compare how Blair Witch was done in that genre to this with Bigfoot, it's like Blair Witch with Bigfoot. I think it does a great job of using that kind of film technique to get the story across. It's really great. I love the silence in there. I love the long shots. And I really respect that they were able to get out there and do this and improvise a lot of it, too. So... yeah, I think it's a good one.
Yeah, I completely agree. If you're listening to this podcast and you listen to any of our work, you're obviously into the cryptozoology, you're into Bigfoot. This is the film for you. It certainly hits all those marks. It's entertaining. It's scary. Yeah, there's definitely scary parts.
Oh, yeah.
I recommend you get your friends together. You do a slumber party. You turn out the lights. You watch this movie. It's socially distanced or wait till the pandemic or whatever. I don't want to get sued, but
put plastic up between everybody.
Just put sheets of plastic or wear a plastic trash bag or something.
Actually, I think with Amazon, you can do like a party watch thing where you all watch it, like watch and chat with others.
Oh, we should start doing that. Now we have to do that.
Patreon reward. It's a watch party where we all kind of like Mystery Science Theater, these bad documentaries and stuff.
But this is
in reality, you're just going to hear me snoring because I'm going to be out. All right, gentlemen. Well, a big thanks to our guest, Bryce Johnson. And until next time, I have been Derek Hayes of Monsters Among Us.
I've been David Flora of Blurry Photos.
And I've been Justin Zinger, very disappointed with this Bigfoot ale, also of Zingness.
Good night, everyone.
Later.